You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 13 May. We've got US CPI due 2:30 this afternoon. Expected no change. 2.4%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we've got Alex Days from Thimble Wealth. I want to touch on the Boxer first results as a listed company, details there, but then touch on Lewis. That was a massive update, and the stock responded in kind. We've got Redefined CEO Andrew Koenen on results. Local office continues to struggle. Poland looking really good. Ben PMO Herbert on Colgrow M3 results. Revenue drops almost a third, but gross margins are remaining high. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Budget 3.0, provincial budgets in the firing line, meeting between Minister of Finance and all provincial finance MECs taking place today. News 24, US and China reached deal to slash tariffs. The United States and China said on Monday agreed a deal to slash the tariffs for 90 days. Morning markets, the US was very green. S&P up 3.25%, NASDAQ 4% higher. East is actually mostly red. Sydney's down 0.7. Tokyo is up 0.1. Hong Kong is down 1.7 and Tencent off 1.8%. Commodities red. Gold futures 3,233. Brent 64.69. Platinum 982. Palladium 945. The rand is 18.26. Bitcoin is 101,600. Opening call for our market, red 160 points or 0.2% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Alex Dace. You find him, of course, on Thimble Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. Boxer, maiden results as a listed business. Some movements down in the HEPS. That's new issues of shares. But if we look at the core business, looking fairly good. Are they looking to sort of keep growing at mid-single digit like-for-like sales? They want to add about 25 stores and 35 liquor stores a year. Strong trading margin. A good set of numbers from Boxer and potential for the years ahead. Your thoughts on those numbers?
Yes, good morning, Simon. So I would agree that I think the numbers from Boxer was quite good. And compared to expectations, you know, before it became listed, I think it's in line. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a few factors here that makes it a bit more complex. So it makes comparisons not that easy. Mm. So for example, you know, this, the debt guarantee with Pick and Pay, you know, you had less load shedding in the previous period. You know, you've got the highest shares in issue. They had to raise debt of Pick and Pay, which had to be funded. All of these factors has impact on the numbers. So, and I think it will continue to have impact on the numbers even into next year. So that's important note for the average viewer that is looking into Boxer. But I think if we do make adjustments and so forth, you'll see the numbers are quite good. So, for example, I think the like-for-like numbers is still good, even though it slowed down a little bit in H2. It was considered that food inflation has come down quite a lot in South Africa. It's barely positive, according to them, if you take the mix changes in effect. They had a very good growth in GP margin, which is quite surprising considering the economic situation. Mm-hmm. And I think something that perhaps wasn't highlighted enough yesterday is the very good growth in other income. Specifically in H2, yeah. I think it was over 18%. And those are usually very high margin. And if you look at other retail companies like Cleeks and ShopRite, that's usually a very big driver of earnings over time. So that's something to look out for in the business. Another impact I forgot to mention is the tax rates are still quite low. And that's a bit higher now instead of results. So all of these factors has had a bit of impact. But I think, you know, we still think the long-term growth trajectory of this business looks very, very strong. But perhaps in the short term, you're going to see earnings growing slightly slower than revenue due to these adjustments and because they're investing for future. So we think patient investors will be rewarded. Mm-hmm. And if there's any weakness in the share price, we think it's a buying opportunity.
Yeah, I take your point. There's lots of moving parts at this point, but if you look out, it looks quite positive. Lewis, it was actually a stock pick of yours on Stockwatch last night. Massive day yesterday, but it's still, I mean, it's trading even after that huge move yesterday. That trading update was immensely strong. Doesn't tell us much, but except that they're going to increase earnings around 55% to 65%, sitting on a PE of around 8, a dividend yield of a little under 8. This is an insanely good business at a really, really good price.
Yes, agreed. So if you look at the sell side analysts, they had about 30% earnings.
Yeah.
And then we were looking about 50. We thought perhaps we're a bit on the bullish side, but now it's came even above our number. So a very, very good number from them. I think it's key to highlight with them, you know, if you look at their guidance from where they expect GP margins, operating margins, it's quite clear that they're above those thresholds at the moment. So they're doing very, very well there. And they have invested a lot of capital into the debtors book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this debtors book usually takes about 2-3 years before it starts actually producing earnings and cash flows. And we think we're starting to see evidence of that. And usually when you invest in a debtors book, you see increase in your bad debts.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing that at Lewis. In fact, they're actually guiding that debtors cost is actually coming down. And collections has improved materially in Lewis over the last 5 years. And that's because they simply added debit orders during COVID, believe it or not. And that has been a game changer for Lewis. Since they've done that, the debtors cost has reduced substantially, and they've been able to grow the business. So I think fundamentally the business looks a lot different. The margins are high. You're going to see much higher ROEs in the business now. I do want to caution, perhaps the debt levels will get a bit on the high end now, and they'll have to pay down some debt. And after that, you'll probably see a resumption of share buybacks again. But the dividend will be sustained. We think it's a very good number. They can probably still continue to grow earnings from this number. But let's wait for more details. But I think on face value, it looks very encouraging for them. And they're very well positioned in our view.
Yeah, and you mentioned share buybacks. 10 years ago, they had about 90 million. They've now got under 50 million. That is significant buybacks with a stock that still has, as you say, a chunky dividend yield. We'll leave it there. Alex Dayson, Thimble Wealth, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. Boxer, what did you make of those numbers? I thought they were good. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, as Alex points out. I thought they looked fairly good. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Redefine CEO Andrew Kooning. They had results for 6 months ending February. So revenue up 3.5%, net asset value at R7.82, loan to value down 1.1% at 41.2. Andrew, appreciate the time. I suppose let's start with office. You and I have talked a lot about office over the many years. It's still a tough space, is my reading.
Yes, Simon, absolutely. Offices have been, you know, for a long, long time now, been in a tough spot, even before the pandemic, which celebrated its fifth anniversary on the 27th of March. There was an oversupply at that point already. And what we've seen subsequent to that is that there's been no new demand coming to market as a consequence of sluggish economic growth as well as high unemployment levels here in South Africa. And that's really what we're seeing play out, Simon. There's no new users coming to market driving any demand. And as a consequence, market rentals are sluggish. And the take-up of space is really, you know, a relocation, if you like, of tenants out of lower-grade properties into higher-grade properties. And that's what we're seeing at Redefine.
And you also mentioned in the numbers, Rosebank, Cape Town, obviously big areas. Your other vacancies, they seem, I mean, pretty much in line. Retail may be a little low, but I don't know. Maybe there's just generally bigger turnover in retail. Locally, vacancies, not really a headache for you and your team.
Yeah, Simon, we're working very hard on filling our spaces, both the retail and the industrial, which, by the way, the industrial's done fabulously well with a 1-odd%, you know, vacancy level as at the hard fear stage. But once again, there is a flight to quality, and we are very much focused on that, you know, across the sectors, and you see it playing out in our occupancy levels.
Your industrial, really long leases, 55% of them beyond 2029. This, I imagine, is just a feature of industrial.
It really is, Simon. You know, the industrial sector has proven over the years to be a very defensive one. in that most of the leases that you do sign up are for the longer term. Mm-hmm. So it's not uncommon to sign a lease between 5 and 10 years in these spaces. And that's what you're seeing come out in these statistics.
Turning to Poland, which is about a third of the portfolio, Poland's strong, essentially. It's at, I mean, full occupancy, 99 point something occupancy, and looking really strong.
Yes, Simon, we're very happy with our core portfolio. It's five prime properties in Poland, in the large cities. And the good thing is there's no development activity of such shopping centers at the moment, which bodes well for occupancy levels as well as for market rentals. And you see it both playing out on both fronts. 99.2% occupancy is virtually fully let. You can't get fuller than that. And you're also seeing, you know, from a reversion point of view, a very nice positive coming through at 3.4%, which tells you that there's underlying market rental growth as well in that market.
Yeah, and I take your point. 100% is not actually viable for vacancies. The conflict in Ukraine, the war in Ukraine, we have chatted over it. Initially, you know, it was really in Kiev. It was probably quite big in the minds of Poles. Has that sort of receded? I mean, there's potentially peace talks happening. If we get peace in Ukraine, does that change things markedly for you? Or has it become, and I hate to say it, but almost a part of life these days in Poland?
Yeah, as you know, Simon, the war's been going on for a few years now. So it does become kind of something happening across the border.
Yeah.
Directly in Poland, if you travel the country, you won't see any, you know, effects of such a war. However, where it does play out is not on the economic side, but certainly from an investment activity point of view, from an institutional portfolio kind of large-scale transactions, those are largely on hold as a consequence of this uncertainty. So I would suggest that the best outcome for Poland is not necessarily an economic one, but it's more a return of foreign investment, which will flow when there's peace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate the war's moved more down south, but there is that, it weighs on you. Coming back to South Africa, solar now over 50,000. You're constantly adding more. Obviously, load shedding has largely gone. Solar's now become more than just about load shedding. This is just about green credentials. This is around cheaper power. And you're continuing to add in significant numbers.
We are, Simon. And a big reason for that is actually thanks to NERSA and Eskom. You know, as they award tariff increases well in excess of the official inflation rate, projects that 5 or so years ago perhaps were not very profitable or were marginal at best are now becoming, you know, very interesting from an investment prospect point of view, given that the cost of electricity has continued to grow. And as a consequence of that, we are seeing further installations underway. And hopefully we'll see a lot more on the industrial front, where we've got large rooftops that are screaming out for solar. Mm-hmm. However, we need municipal cooperation from a wheeling perspective to take place so that we can sell back that surplus electricity to the grid. Right now, it's very difficult and problematic from a regulatory point of view.
Yeah, I get you, absolutely. Last question, in terms of your costs as a group, really being kept under control. Certainly, we've seen inflation coming down, but cost controls are really helping with Redefine.
Yes, Simon. So in a market where our top line is challenged, as I said earlier, you know, in the office sector particularly, we do look at being as efficient as humanly possible so that we can maintain and improve operating profit margin, which we are pleased to report has improved over this reporting period to 76.9%.
Well, leave it there. That's Redefine CEO Andrew Koenig. Andrew, appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Ben-Pierre Moherba, CEO of Colgrow M3, new CEO, returning CEO of Colgrow M3. Disclaimer up front, I hold shares in Colgrow M3. Results for year-end Feb, revenue off almost a third, HEPS down 9%. Dividend sliced a little bit, but dividend being paid. Ben, appreciate the time today. Revenue under pressure, what's the story with revenue? Is this change of focus? Is this consumers under pressure? What's happening here?
No, Simon, is a combination of things, but I think the main thing is it was a deliberate slowdown in construction activity leading up to the elections. Mm. If you look at the results presentation in August, we informed the market then to say, leading into uncertain times, we didn't want half units under construction. And I think that's just a function of lessons learned during 2019, when we had some problems with units that were invaded.
That's right. I'd actually forgotten about that. And I remember chatting at half year, and in fact, a year ago, into the same process. How are you finding the consumer and bank lending as well? Because you do say you're doing a bit of a shift to greater open market sales.
Yes, we do see the shift towards that. The consumer is under pressure. There is no question that the consumer is under pressure. 2024 was a tough year for the consumer. But I think going into 2025, we saw that the consumer confidence is returning. And I think more importantly, the appetite from the banking side, from the financial institutions, is improving. So that's all good news.
What sort of price points are you targeting at the moment? I know you've got some flexibility in that regard. What sort of prices are you looking at for the market?
If you look at Fleurhof, a project like Fleurhof is selling in the 600,000 rand market range. So it's still in the lower end of the market, where we still move between the fully subsidized right up to the gap market, which is currently pegged at about 38,500 rand joint income.
Gross margins, 29.43%, actually improved over the period. And chatting over the years with your predecessor, I mean, one of the things you do look at is just efficiency within the actual apartments and how pieces are put together. Is this part of what's driving gross margins?
Yes, definitely efficiencies. But I think the bigger effect which you saw is our move towards the private sector, where our exposure with public sector was a little bit lower. And the fact that we must remember we don't revalue land. So the Fleurhof project that's been coming since 2010, we unlocked some value there, where the land was acquired at prices in 2010, and we're selling at going current rates. So we unlocked some historic value of infrastructure installed over a period of time and land acquired a long time ago. So they distorted the market a little bit. Our target market is still between the 20 to 25%. Range, but we just above that.
Okay, gotcha. The land makes perfect sense there. 1,543 housing opportunities under construction. Is that a sort of level you're comfortable with? Would you look for maybe a little higher or lower? What would be your ideal number of construction and sales during a period?
No, we would like to see that increase. I think anything between 1,500 and up to 2,000, 2,500 is a target we would like to reach at some stage. But it's a combination of completing units, and as you saw through the revenue, we didn't complete enough units during this year under this reporting period because we didn't have enough under construction because of this deliberate slowdown.
Yeah, absolutely. Memorial Parks, small for you, but growing. My understanding was the plan here was that Memorial Parks would essentially cover all of the costs for the broader group. But Memorial Parks is doing nicely. There's some reclassification, which I don't want to go into because it's technical and accounting and JSC, but it's doing nicely.
The Memorial Park is a great business. We collected about 95 million rand in cash in the reporting period, so it covered group overheads, and that was a target set for it some years ago. To say if that market segment can cover group overheads, it's a nice to have. Seeing that we don't revalue land and we only recognize revenue when we sell off to the end users. So it's a lumpy business. The development business cash flows are lumpy, so it's nice to have someone contributing and paying monthly overheads.
And you can do the payment plans and the like. How many Memorial Parks do you have these days?
We've got 6 active parks. The one was delayed. Rustenburg should have been online. We had some town planning issues on that, and that will only come online in the 3rd quarter of this year. And I think the important thing is to increase the number of contributing parks and not overtrade the parks contributing. So there's a combination of looking at new parks, getting land to supplement parks that's going to come to end of life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we would like to see that the number of parks contributing to revenue increase.
We'll leave it there. That's Ben Pierre Malherbe, CEO, Calgary M3. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Nick Kunze yesterday from Sanlam Private Wealth. We were talking about the AngloGold Ashanti Q1 trading update, a 7-fold increase in free cash flow, and they plan to give half of that back to investors as a dividend. We asked what you thought they should do, gold miners, with all this cash. Half of you said, yeah, give it back as dividends. The rest was split between buybacks, smart acquisitions, note the smart there, and potentially new projects. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions.
We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Expat tapping into two-pot windfall.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.